Blog Talk Radio. the rivers of Babylon. There we sat down. Yeah, we wept when we remembered Zion. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yeah, we wept when we remembered Zion.
Then the reindeer carried us away in captivity, required from us the song. Now how shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land?
Tiwa eto kan eto kan to mi gogo ilu titi tara ale tara oko lo nse lore ajola wa ko ba o ja kere oja dele odi direct iku soko wa nkan je ayun lo ayun bo lowo yen nu atepele se etena a ma be obe ni besu gogo omo yoruba ka kiri agbaye nle loko lodo leyin odi e je ka jo gbe ti wa ntiwa laruge eto ta ti yanan na ede atasa ni bi ta ti nfogban kora eni ko gbodo kulede yoruba je ede to gbaju gbaja ka kiri agbaye ni bi kidi ka fowo soya ko mo yoruba la wa ti wa ntiwa se mo pe teni teni takisan ta tan boni baba se pe gba e laye ba ni fun gba e ni loruko gbogbo onile ise nla nla to fi mo ti kekeke e wa polowo oja yin lori eto tiwa ntiwa be fe se kede oniruru ayeye aye nbe lori eto tiwa ntiwa ka polongo faraye ka jo gbera wa laruge be si nfadari eto eyun MC e kan si ko tiwa ntiwa ori lo fun wa se ki sawose tiwa ntiwa lori Yoruba Radio olomo sikata ni baba agbado.
Today we have a special guest on this radio. This is the One to One Radio. This radio is designed for Africans so that we can disseminate information to those who need them. And you know, they say information is power. So you may be rich. wish you may have, you may be in position, but if you don't have information, you are like, just like if you are dead. So we have our solicitor in the house today. When it is time, I will let her talk to everybody concerning our immigration issues. We are privileged to have her because she's not always available like that. But for us to have called her and drove down all the way from Maryland to come and appear live on this show, it is a great privilege. We really appreciate her for sparing her time to come over here because she is a very busy person, very, very busy person. So that one is, by the way, let me quickly intimate us with some happenings in Africa, most especially last week. Let me mention my name. My name is Fafi. I have my granddaughter there, Nene Fafi. She's the engineer here. She's the engineer here. She connects everything together to make sure that you are able to watch on the Facebook, on YouTube, on the radio, and on Google. So you can browse those social media. You can directly connect us there. And I believe you're going to enjoy today's program. It's going to enlighten us. It's going to lose some bondage and some things which you don't know before, or people might have been lying to you about. Today, we are going to unveil, we're going to unravel the mystery. So I believe by the time we finish this program, you would like to hear more, listen more, and even have our guests more on this show. Thank you very much, all of you over there. I appreciate you. I can see some people lining up on through with their phone. They connected through the phone. Some are on Google already. Some joined through the Facebook. And I want to tell you that this program, you can always watch it on YouTube. After we finish, it is going to be relayed on YouTube, and it will be there permanently. Anytime you want to connect on YouTube, just browse Fafi Connect. That is it. Then you see all the programs we have done there. And in addition, if you want to watch, listen to us on Google, just type Tiwa, N space Tiwa, so that if that N will be in the middle, Tiwa and Tiwa. Then click Live, then you can watch us. If after this program you still want to listen on Google, you just click On Demand. When you click On Demand, that doesn't mean you are going to pay money. No, they will not require your credit card. No, you're going to watch it, listen to it for free. So whatever we do here today, it is right there on Google. As I'm talking right now, Google is recording it and it is being live. And it will remain there for life. It will remain on Google's archive for life. So you can listen to this program also on Google. Likewise, you can go on Facebook, browse my name if you are my friend on Facebook, even if you are not a friend, if you are enemies. So you can just you can just go there, browse Fafi Elu Shesan Fafi. When you browse it, you click like, then you can enjoy the program. So thank you very much. Those of you that are joining with your phone, I can see Akeem there. I can see the Laura Bon Ambassador. I can see Baba Mabayoke. I can see Ekwoko Rafa. I can see many other people. I can see Mama Ila. I can see you, I can see Elijah there, and the host of others whom I may not be able to mention right now. So, before we go into the program proper, let me quickly intimate you with what happened in Africa. Africa or on African soil during this week or last week. You know Chad, that country, that West African country, very close to Nigeria. We share border together. So they have a president there who had been there since 1990. So the name of the president was, I'm using words for him because he's dead now, Idris Deby. So this Idris Deby snatched the government, overthrew somebody, Habre. Yes, he overthrew him and became the president. Since then, he has remained tight on the seat. Every election they ever conducted there, he won. Recently, he even changed the tenure or the term of the governors there into 6 years' term. And for your information, he just won another 6 year term. But death deprived him of being sworn in again and again as usual. So in that country, there were other oppositions. Because when I say he's been ruling since 30 years ago, you would think maybe everybody just let him off and say, oh, you can go ahead and rule us, or maybe you are the best. No. They struggled with him, with power. They wanted to go, they wanted to be there through the ballot. But every time they had election there, he always won, whether by crook or whatever. So he always, you know what I mean, what is happening in Africa. So he always won the election. So, but of recent, he just won another 6 year term. But he died. One characteristic of this man is that he used to lead his soldiers to the battle, to the war front. In about 2 or 3 months ago, he led his soldiers to Sambisa Forest in Nigeria. You know, Nigeria and this country, they share a common border.
And Cameroon too.
So the Boko Haram, the insurgents, they have been troubling as the trouble was in the northern Nigeria. They trouble this country too. So it got to a time this man couldn't take it no more. Then he needed to lead his soldiers into the battle and killed many Boko Haram members, and he returned home alive. So several battles like that he led to soldiers. He led by example. But Yoruba used to say a parable that a warrior usually or normally die in the war front. So eventually this man died leading the battle. So there were other insurgents, or they are not insurgents this time around, the agitators. So they decided to overthrow his government with guns and all kinds of weaponry. And he led his soldiers into the battle to battle these people. And those people, the government soldier killed 300 out of them. 6 soldiers of his own side of Shadia died, including himself. He died while fighting the insurgents. So some people are saying, why must he go into war front with his soldier? He should have stayed at home. Because somebody is going to tell stories about the war or about the battle will not die. So he has died in the war front now. So he is not there to tell stories. He has been telling stories of victory before, but now it's end of story. He died. Now, another thing worthy of mentioning is that his own son is an army general. His own son is an army general. Immediately he died, and the insurgents could not take over or overthrow. His son became automatic president. So the country is now on transitional program, I think for some few months before the election. I'm very, very sure. Go and quote me and write it down. His son, we take off the army uniform and become the president. So it has happened in several countries in Africa. Remember, Nelson Mandela, he died there. His son took it over, and so on and so forth. Even in Cameroon, where in Cameroon, I'm happy to tell you that the solicitor there in the house, she's from the Cameroon, where Obia has been ruling forever. So it happened there. That one is, by the way, you heard about the death of the judgment over Floyd's death. So the person that killed him had been convicted. So that is, you heard it. You heard it. Then the first lady, Cameroon. That is the wife of Ahidjo, yes. The wife of Ahidjo eventually died. So Ahidjo, yes, he died. She died in Senegal, where her husband was also died. You know, for Biya, Ahidjo handed over to for Biya. So. Or that is to say, Obia succeeded Ahidjo. But because of the political influence of Ahidjo, Obia, there was a misunderstanding between him and the current president. So he needed to go on exile. So he died on exile. So there were agitation that they should bring his corpse, his dead body, back into Cameroon, because he fought for the independence of that country. But Obia refused because of the influence of that person. That person was so influential, even in death, more than when he was alive. So eventually his wife also died there in Senegal. So that is another information I intend to give to you. Another thing I want to say is about, let me go to Nigeria. We read during the week that Nigeria released 144 policemen to go and make peace in Somalia. Some of you that are listening, especially you Nigerians, you say, oh, Nigerian police, they've been able to maintain peace in their own country, and they are now going out to maintain peace in another country. You know, whatever, Nigeria is still a giant in Africa. Even my friend lawyer here knows that Nigeria is a giant in Africa. We are a giant. The population is there, and the manpower is there, the resources is there. Nigeria is blessed with resources, but the problem is bad leadership. Though, because we have wasted 99.9%, or let me say 99% of our resources, that doesn't mean we can still not do exploits with the remaining 1%. Even with that 1%, we can still do exploits. So, Nigeria sent 144 police to Somalia to maintain peace, to be security, and all kinds of things there, just to maintain peace with the collaboration of the United Nations. So they are there right now as I'm talking to you. So that is just the brief news I intend to get to you from Africa. Then another thing that I want to mention is there is a minister in Buhari's government. They call his name Pantami. Maybe you've been hearing all kinds of things that are going on. Pandemic. So he is a minister for communication. And this man, because of his activities with the Boko Haram, all these bandits and so on and so forth, America put him on a watch list. Imagine a Nigerian minister being on a watch list of America. It speaks volumes about Nigerian government. So, in year 2000, when Yusuf died, Yusuf was the leader of the Boko Haram. This man, Fantami, was so infuriated. He spoke and spoke and spoke that why should the person be killed? That is to let you know that he has a soft spot for the Boko Harams. And another thing is when the Boko Harams were being captured, jailed, or killed, then he was there to advocate for them that if the Niger Delta boys, the militant boys, could be pardoned and be paid, why can't the government pardon the Boko Harams? So all these things he said in those days when he didn't know that he would become a person. So that is a lesson for all of us, that we should talk less. We should talk because you don't know where you can still go in future. You don't know the position God can still put you. So that is why a proverb in Africa says, a very deep talk and a very deep cut. When a very deep cut heals, a very deep talk will not heal. Let me say that again. A very deep talk and a very deep cut. When a very deep cut heals, a very deep talk will not heal. People can still make reference to what you said 20 years after, 40 years, even after you are dead, they will still be making reference to everything you said. That is why the Bible says, if any man says he's a believer and he does not bridle his tongue, his religion is in vain. So we should be very, very, very cautious of what we say, especially during this time of social media. So everything you say is being recorded. So one day they will bring it out against you. So for the Minister of the Federal Republic of Nigeria to have soft spots for Boko Haram, and people have been agitating that this man should be fired, he should be relieved of his post, or the man should voluntarily resign. You know, resigning a position is un-Nigerian, is un-African. So in Africa, we don't resign. If it were to be in Western world, immediately, even a mere allegation, they have never even confirmed it. Boom, you put paper down. So I resign, and because they hate all this kind of controversy. But over there, controversy builds our ego. You become so pompous and about it seems Buhari is not ready to relieve him of his position. So he's still there as Minister of Communication. If Fantami is the Minister for Communication, you should know, and he's having soft spots for the Boko Harams, then you know that all our information are leaking to. No wonder sometimes Jonathan said there are Boko Harams in my government. And right now, there are Boko Harams and bandits in Buhari's government. If Boko Harams are there in Buhari's government, nobody can be able to torpedo them. You cannot conquer. It is not possible. It is like an enemy within. So when an enemy is within, you can never succeed in winning that war. Because the moment you begin to plan, they reveal the secret to the enemy. There were times when the soldiers would have concluded that tomorrow we are meeting at so-so place to fight the Boko Harams. Then one of the soldiers or somebody will just tell the Boko Haram, we are coming at so-so time. And the Boko Harams will have prepared for them and killed our soldiers en masse. So it is very, 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 very pathetic, and I don't know what is happening in Africa. So I just gave you that information. I know some of you must have read it before. You must have been contemplating over it, but you are now hearing from the horse's mouth that it really, really, really happened. So let us watch him, Pandemic or Pandemic or whatever his name is. Let us watch whether he's going to resign or continue being the Minister of the Federal Republic of Nigeria. So that is all about that. Let me, I am appealing to all of you that are online now. You can join one or two more people with yourself so that they can enjoy this program. And if you have, you can ask questions, even by proxy. Somebody might give you a question you want to ask our solicitor. Or it is, you may not even mention your name. Yes, you may not mention it. It's not compulsory. You should mention your name. So we are going into that area now so that we could pour our hearts out, say our questions, and the lawyer is here. And let me let you know this. This lady here with me in the studio, God has used her for several people pertaining to immigration. I have testimonies of many people. Unfortunately, I asked some people to come over here into the studio so that they can, come and give a physical testimony, face-to-face testimony, but they told me they will be at work. So let me tell you just one out of the testimonies. We have a guy who was arrested by the immigration. By the time he was arrested, it was not as if he committed a crime or whatever, but something happened along the line. And was declared there was a warrant on him because of one offense or the other. So the day they were to arrest him, he was with another lady because they were coming from work. So they arrested both of them, and both of them were legal here. So they got into the immigration jail. They were about to be deported back to Nigeria. So they contacted me. Then I contacted this lady that we are in trouble. Two of us are there. And she told me there was no problem. I said, really? She said, yes. Okay. Then she got into action. As a matter of fact, the day the judgment was to be delivered, I was right there in the court. I was right there in the court. And the lady pleaded. These two guys could have been deported long ago. This immigration lawyer pleaded that these people should not be deported and they should be given paper to work. They don't have paper. They are working and they are law-abiding. They're violate law or whatever. So, and the judge just used, what do you call that, wooden something you put on the, so, and said, oh, grant your decision is granted, let them have their papers. I'm telling you, those two guys, they have their papers from the prison into having paper. So, sometimes when God wants to justify you or when he wants to do something great in your life, you have to pass through fire. So they went to jail first before they got their papers. So those people, they are here in, they are still here in America and they are doing good. So a lot of testimonies like that, if I begin to share them, I will not leave this place today. So I'm going to be asking some few questions from her. Then I will throw the question to the audience out there. Hello, can I have that in? Okay. So I want you to write down your questions over there. What do you want to ask from this lady, because we're going to trash out some questions today, those questions that have been lingering and you know don't know how to go about it. So I want you to write them out and ask your question. So I am, excuse me, let me. So let me quickly, okay, can you please introduce yourself first?
Good evening, Pastor. Good evening, everybody listening out there. I'm very pleased to be here. I'm very honored that you have invited me to attend this session. I am excited to help. So that's what I'm going to be doing tonight. My name is Cecile Nanchuan. I'm an immigration attorney. I've been doing immigration work for the past 15 years. My office is located in Silver Spring, Maryland, but I help people from across the country, across the United States, and sometimes outside of the United States. So feel free to ask your questions tonight, people. As Pastor Francis said, you know, this is an open floor. I do not pretend to solve specific cases live because there are some confidentiality issues. But I would rather just give general advice. My plan tonight is to, if Pastor Fafi allows, to briefly talk about three specific points before we get to questions.
Talking also about how to prepare for a green card when you get married. We could talk about it because that issue has come up a lot lately with my clients and even outside of my office in court. We also perhaps we talk about asylum, what the Biden administration is planning to do about asylum law. If a Nigerian can win asylum, which a lot of people think they cannot. There is no war in Nigeria whatsoever. So we're going to talk about a whole bunch of things, but we have to be mindful of the time.
We still have a lot of time.
Okay.
So before I go into that, let me quickly go this route first.
This song is dedicated to all the children of the world.
This is me, can I feel the existing Payment plan with IRS, then you are working towards
paying.
Resolution of the debt, then, you know, it won't penalize you.
Okay.
But if you owe them and you're still on your corner and they send you those letters that they usually send and you miss them, then you are barred from citizenship.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So at the end of the process, you get to be sworn in and you get a naturalization certificate, which is different than the certificate of citizenship. Your certificate is citizen. The certificate of citizenship is what is given to a child who is less than 18 years old when his parents become citizens. The child doesn't go to the swearing ceremony. If you are a citizen and your children have a green card and they are here and they are less than 18 years old, they don't go through the naturalization. They go straight to the post office and they apply for the passport.
Wow.
It's a bit convoluted. I know I went beyond your question.
Thank you.
I hope I answered it.
I know our listeners are learning. Okay. Now, concerning the other issues, the other areas you said you wanted to touch, like asylum, Bill Biden's proposal. Oh, but let me go to this question first before we go to that. The GOP, the Republicans, and the Democrats. The Democrats, they are pro-immigrant. The other party, I don't know about them. But of recent, I read that the GOP, they want to put a bill forward concerning the immigrants. So when I read it, it is a little bit closer to what the Democrats plans to do for the immigrants. So then I thought that if two warring factions, that is two oppositions, if they now go in the same way of thinking alike, then it will be
good for us.
It is good for us. So what is your take on that?
Well, exactly what you said. If everybody crosses the aisle towards the other part and they come up with a comprehensive immigration bill that, that gives legal status to so many undocumented people in the U.S., that would be great. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I think with the Biden proposal, if half of the GOP meets us, it is good.
It is good.
Yeah, that's my take on it.
All right, thank you. Let's now go to asylum seekers.
Okay.
What is asylum? And why must someone seek asylum in another man's land?
That could be the topic of a class. Yeah. The way you ask the question, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of broad. I'm going to try to narrow it as much as I can. Asylum is the process by which you seek protection from torture. In order to apply for asylum, you have to be in America. You have to be in the country.
Okay.
You cannot apply for asylum outside of the country. Let's talk about America. You cannot be an asylum applicant outside. If you have issues in your country and you run away from your country, because you are a refugee, because you are afraid of persecution, you go straight to the United Nations Office for Refugees. There is a process there, and you can be admitted in the country as a refugee. That's not what you want to know. You want to know about people that are here and that are applying for asylum. So it is the process by which you seek protection from this country, because you are afraid to return in your country for fear of persecution.
Okay.
Technically, in order to prove that you were persecuted, you must give your testimony. I was persecuted. First of all, the asylum officer has to decide if what you suffered back home rises to the level of persecution. You know what I'm saying? It's a matter of quantity, of degree, I should say. So if you were slapped twice by a policeman on the street because he doesn't like your bars, right? Mm-hmm. Or he doesn't like that, so a guy wearing a skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And you come here, the officer might decide that what you suffered, quote unquote, does not rise to the level of persecution.
Okay.
Persecution is extreme cruelty inflicted upon somebody.
Somebody.
Right? Now, not only you must have been persecuted and you have to prove it, the reason why you are persecuted also matters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If your brother-in-law persecuted you because he likes your wife, right, and you come here in America and you say, my brother likes my wife, so he was hitting me, he scared me with his gun, and such and such, you might get something else. But you will not get asylum because that's a private matter.
Okay.
And it doesn't fall within the canvas of asylum law.
Okay.
Asylum is specific to some specific issues.
Mm.
You will get asylum, for example, if you are a political opponent to Buhari.
Okay.
Like you go on the street with a banner saying, you know, that Pantemi guy that you were just talking about is Buhari's cousin.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Buhari is keeping him in this
government.
Position of leadership.
Okay.
You know, Buhari must go or whatever. If you are outspoken against a regime in a country where there is no freedom of expression, freedom of speech, like in Russia or like in Cameroon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then if you get here, you can either prove that you run away because they're about to catch you, and because they have killed opponents
before,
or detained them, or jailed them, or tortured them, you are more likely than not to suffer the same fate, right? So you can also, maybe after you have been detained, jailed, beaten up, and tortured by the government, and they release you, but that you're still on the watch list, then you come here and you say, look, I was arrested because I was holding a banner saying Buhari must go or Paul Biya must go. I was beaten. I was, you know, tortured, and here's my medical certificate, whatever, whatever. But the truth is, the matter is that when you have an asylum claim, your testimony is the number one proof.
Okay.
Right? Then the other part is that the United States Department of State has a report on each country, every single country in the world each year.
Mm-hmm.
It's called what we call country condition. They publish it.
Okay.
And they know everything about
that country.
What's going on in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
They know that in Cameroon, in Nigeria, there's corruption,
mm-hmm.
police brutality, embezzlement, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They have examples because they have teams of experts going on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So because Cameroon is notorious for, let's say, political repression,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
The killing of protesters or the jail, the detention of political opponents. They already know that. So that's 50% of the battle.
Okay.
Now you have to complete your testimony with the truth, with your real story. Then the asylum officer is going to decide if you are credible, because that's the number one criteria. And then if, you know, your story is legit, based on corroboration, which is what you provided, as far as testimonies, medical report, and all that good stuff, and then he's going to grant you asylum. If he denies you asylum, and by the time you are denied asylum, you're already out of status, then your case is transferred to immigration court to give you a second opportunity to apply. So basically, what I'm trying to say is that you do have to prove your asylum case. Asylum is not just political. Just because I gave a political example, it's not just political.
Mm-hmm.
People who have suffered female genital mutilation, women who have suffered female genital mutilation, which is circumcision, that still occurs in our countries, Nigeria and Cameroon, in some areas of Cameroon, and other places. When they come here, they are granted asylum based on that, because that's a serious violation of human rights. Of course, my clients who come to me when they are female, I always ask them, you know, did you suffer this, right? And if she says yes or I don't know, then I send her to to see a doctor to be analyzed, and then the doctor is going to write a report on what he sees or do not see, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So in that situation, the woman is going to be granted asylum. They got asylum given to widows.
Oh.
In our countries where being a widow, I mean, being married to somebody is, you belong to the family in law. When your husband passes, sometimes you are forced to do some rituals which are not in line with your religion or even your taste.
Yeah.
You are asked to sleep by the course for such and such time. Sometimes your head is shaved, you are beaten. I mean, those are customs, that rituals that are accepted by our people, right? And then at the end of the process, sometimes you are given to your brother-in-law as a wife because they don't want to leave. You belong to them, literally. So if you can prove your case, I mean, I've had cases about widows that came to my office, and then I was asking them, why don't you want to go to Nigeria? Because I don't want to be my brother-in-law's wife, you know. I don't. So this is grounds for asylum. But, of course, you have to prove your case. So there are many, many categories. Domestic violence victims, you know, they can be granted asylum. Gay people in countries where it's repressed, or even if in Nigeria there is a law and it's severely enforced, then they are granted asylum. But you can live in a country where there are no laws, but still it's shone upon or it's repressed. Or people get beaten to death, even in America, for being gay. Then you can be granted asylum, you know. And there are so many categories. Another funny example, I had a client from one of our countries, and she came here with her son. Her son was about 6 years old when they came here. And her son has what we call cerebral palsy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a debilitating disease. It's physical, mental.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, the little boy is probably 10 years old now, but he cannot walk. He is like a child that is maybe 6 months. When you see him, you can see that he has developmental disabilities, right? So back home in her country, she was treating him with traditional medicine, with pressure from the in-laws and even her family, because that's how we treat these people. Sometimes they will say that the child was a snake, that he has to go back to the woods or to the water. I mean, it was just difficult for her. So she came here and she came to me for papers because she entered with a tourist visa. And then I applied for asylum based on that. Because what she suffered as a mother and what that little boy suffered when she was forced by her in-laws to go leave the little boy by the water for hours so that the spirit would take him back. That's torture.
Oh, wow.
Okay? And she was granted asylum, but it's not written somewhere that when you have a sick child, you're an asylee.
Mm-hmm.
She was granted asylum because that is domestic violence. You know, in addition to other terms that you will give to what she suffered. So saying that Nigerians cannot get asylum because there is no war in Nigeria, or Cameroonian people get asylum because there's Boko Haram and the Anglophone crisis, that is not true.
That's not true. Okay, let me add this question before I throw the questions to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned female genital mutilation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes during Jonathan's regime, they outlaw genital mutilation.
In 2014. Mm-hmm.
So, but somebody coming here to still claim that his people in the local people, they still wanted to do such a thing with her, will that prove the love? Because I know, it's like you said, these people, they know what is happening in every country. They know that Jonathan made such a law.
Mm-hmm.
Won't they say, oh, it has been outlawed?
They have tried. In fact, the government, when we argue those cases, they say, well, it's against the law now, but nobody ever gets punished.
Mm.
You know, if you look in the internet, you'll see tons of analysis saying that nobody follows that law.
Nobody.
It's a family decision to circumcise the child, right? You have grandmothers in villages that specialize in cutting these women,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, nobody has ever been reported at the police station.
No.
Nobody has ever been prosecuted.
No.
Nobody has ever been detained.
Mm-mm.
And even if it's happening, it's not happening across the board. It only takes 10% of chance of being tortured for an asylum claim to stick. So 10% is a very low standard in terms of percentage. Like you said, the law came out in 2014. Half of Nigerians doesn't even care.
They don't even, you're right.
Let alone know about the law.
Mm.
Okay? Some people do it because that's how it's been done. Some people actually who have suffered it, some women who have suffered it, do that to their daughters. They don't think it's bad at all. They believe in the thing. They believe it's going to prevent the daughter from being a prostitute or being impure or whatever. So it's not, I mean, what I'm saying is that the ladies who come to me were certainly born before 2014. They suffered it. Okay? So if you suffered it, if you were circumcised, then you get asylum. It doesn't matter if the law has been changed or not, because there is no taking back whatever was removed, right?
Okay.
Now, you might get an issue if you are saying, I'm running away because they wanted to circumcise me. That's when the law comes into play, and my argument is, it's still going on. Google it. It is still going on. Some families are actually, even in America, some families here are circumcising their daughters.
Really?
Yes.
You mean America?
Not America.
Okay.
Africans here.
Yes. They should do that.
Either they take the daughter back home
to go and
to be circumcised, or there are some people that are specializing in here in our communities. You know that people go in our communities, we have people that are doing...
I understand.
You know what I'm saying? The opposite of what you're doing.
I know.
I mean, it's a job.
Mm.
Let's say in Africa, it's going to cost maybe 5 naira to circumcise your daughter. Here, it's probably 1,000.
1,000?
Yeah. Wow. So they make a lot of money. In England... There were a couple of people arrested there a few years back. But people believe in the thing. Just because good luck, Jonathan said it's against the law doesn't mean that it's going to stop.
No.
And by the way, he was only saying that towards the end of his reign because he wanted to convince the United Nations that he's done something about women's rights. Who knows how much money he got from saying that. Because the United Nations has been funding grassroots organizations and NGOs to go into villages and educate people about the dangers of female genital mutilation. So it's big money.
Okay, thank you. Let me go to our audience out there. Hold on.
What's up, Friday? Hey, Friday! Ha, Zapuru manam san. Hamba no ban. Zoom talk.
We ma dami no kum combo chilap. Yaz mang fiya kang yo tolum combo chi ma don.
We ma dami no kum combo chi. We ma dami no kum combo chi. We ma dami. Open combochi. When my dame. Open combochi. When my dame. Open combochi. When my dame. Open combochi.
I'm
I have a lot of people who joined online. And those of you who joined through the Facebook, if you have any question, you can just write it. I will read it out and mention your name. But right now, let me go to one of our people who wants to ask a question. 9330, you are here. 9330, hello.
Yeah, good evening. Akaleo.
Hello.
Ego eto lataro. Rasa. Let me use the. I see that our conversation on the on today's program is purely in English, probably because of the guests we have there. So let me. So I will ask my question in English, though that is unusual for us on this program. It's unusual, but then because of the situation, that we ask my question in English too. Good evening, lawyer, immigration lawyer. Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Okay. I have two questions. I'm going to summarize the questions as quickly as possible. Number one question has to do with the immigration, citizenship certificate for the children of those who are already citizens. In the course of your analysis a couple of minutes ago, you mentioned that children of those who became citizens through naturalization cannot go and appear by themselves, but they automatically become citizens as long as their parents granted citizenship. Now, my question concerning that is, how important is it for the children of those category of citizens? How important is the certificate to them? I mean, after 18 years, are still they required to get a certificate? Would they need it in their future endeavors in the United States? I mean, the children. That's number one question.
Okay, can you just hold? Let her answer the question first.
Okay.
He said, importance of the younger ones being citizens or getting the blue passport. Is that your question?
No. I'm particular about the certificate, citizenship certificate for the minors.
I think I understand your question.
Okay.
Because you mentioned before under 16 years, if their parents are granted citizenship through naturalization, they have to get the certificate for the kids. So how important is the certificate, especially after they pass the year of 16? Is it so important, or is it more that they should have in America?
Okay.
Can you just go ahead. Mm-hmm.
All right. First of all, let me rephrase what I said a minute or two ago about those kids. Under the law, specifically under the Child Citizenship Act of 2000, when your parent becomes a U.S. citizen before you turn 18, and you are a permanent resident, you don't need to apply for citizenship on your own through the process of naturalization.
Mm.
You become an immediate American citizen, meaning you can go to the post office and apply for your American passport right away because you have a parent who is a citizen and you are under 18, then you are a citizen. Okay, now the only proof of citizenship that you will have is your passport, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want a certificate, you who is 18 years old or less, if you want a certificate, you have to apply at USCIS, but you will get a certificate of citizenship, mm-hmm. not a certificate of naturalization.
Okay.
You see the difference?
The difference.
Okay. A certificate of naturalization is what you and I got.
Yes.
We were sworn in
mm-hmm.
to respect the Constitution of the U.S.
Yes.
A certificate of citizenship is the document that somebody who has inherited citizenship to his parents because he or she was less than 18. That's what that person gets. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. Now, yeah, you did. Now, you actually... excuse me?
Now it's up to each person or each parent to decide if my son or daughter should get a citizenship or just a passport,
but,
you know.
But is it mandatory or is by choice?
It's by choice to get...
Okay.
Certificate of
citizenship. Okay. That's exactly what I want to know. Okay. That's
okay,
good.
Can you...
Okay.
That question.
So, number two question. Now, there is this couple who won American lottery visa when Nigeria was still qualified. As a matter of fact, they won their American lottery visa, I think, 14, 15 years ago. Now, they are both in America right now, the couple, with their kids, with their two kids. The two kids, they have them here in America. Now, when they won the lottery visa back in Nigeria, when they were filling the form, nobody, the forms that came with the winning letter.
Yes.
Maybe because of the information, the information, the wrong information they got there in Nigeria, because a lot of people got a lot of wrong information. You don't know some stuff until you get here. Now, they got the information then that before they could be given visa of any type, the American embassy in Nigeria, they give consideration to people with families, that okay, if you have one or two kids, it's part of the consideration to grant you a visa. That was the information then. So this couple, they adopted two kids who are not their own, because when they won the American lottery visa, they haven't gotten any issue. They haven't gotten any kids, but they adopted two kids of the family. And they included those two kids as their children in the form that in the information that they provided in the form.
All right.
To get the lottery visa. Okay. Now, but along the line, maybe due to financial concern or whatever, those kids did not go to American embassy for them for visa, even though their names were registered. Okay,
yeah.
Now eventually it was these two couples that came to America with the hope that after a few years they will file for those two kids. But don't forget, they are not the biological parents of those two kids. But the two kids have their names registered already. They even have filed in American embassy. Now,
what is the question?
Let me explain so that she can understand. This is the problem that excuse me, sir. The people that are involved in this problem, they seeking information, and I ask them to even listen to this program. They are listening right now. So let me explain to the lawyer so that she will understand what is going on. I'm not taking your time. Now, when this couple got to this place, they have their own kids, their own biological kids. So due to the pressure from the parents of those children back in Nigeria. You know, all these family matters. Oh, you've already included our kids. Why now are you abandoning our kids? Why are you not coming to take them no more? After all, you have their names in the file when you are processing this thing. Now, the couples now, they were now in big dilemma. Now they were confused. They don't know what is happening. So my question right now is, if they go further to go and reclaim those two kids and fight for them, are they on the right path? Is it appropriate or under the law, or is it okay? Or they can still they fight for those two kids and get visa for them and bring them over, or it's late? This was 14, 15 years ago. So that's the question.
Okay, so how old are the kids now?
Oh, one is 22 years old now, and I think one is around 27 or 28 years. As a matter of fact, the two kids are married now.
They are married now. They are adults.
Excuse me?
So I don't.
Oh, okay.
Those are
okay.
Those are not. Oh, they are adults. So I don't see how benefit from anything. Not only because of their age, number one, because they are married, number two, and because they had prior dealings with immigration where, from what you're telling me, their file or their case was probably abandoned at some point. So when you abandon a case with the embassy or USCIS, there is a presumption of fraud or something. So, I mean, this program was not meant to, like, answer specific things. I mean, if you want specific issues to be resolved, or if you want me to get into details, you have to make an appointment and come to the office. But from what I hear from you, it seems like there were some credibility issues, either between regarding the relationship, the alleged relationship between the petitioner, which is those people that are here, and the potential beneficiaries, which are those children. So, I don't think it can be taken back at this point. I don't know if I've answered your question.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me go to some other people. 8395, you are here. 8395.
Hello.
Hello.
Good day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been following the program, and quite interesting. I want to ask my question from the perspective of the case worker. I am a social worker, and then I have some clients in my caseload who have some immigration issues that sometimes we struggle with it. So my first question now is, the new administration is having a plan, like a program in plan to cover everybody that is already in, to give them, to provide residency and then proceed from, it's like a plan for like 10 years or 8 years or something like that. So
that's
now, so now, some of them that we already referred to some agencies that could help them to file their citizenship and all that. So we have an issue about, do we continue that process or do we have to wait until the government finalizes the process, and then we know what to actually recommend to those people. That is my first question.
Okay, let's answer this one first.
You said you are a caseworker, right?
Yes.
And are you working for the government, or you are working for a non-profit organization?
I'm working for the state.
Okay.
Now, when you say, I'm trying to understand. So you, basically you're asking me, for those who are applying for citizenship, do you stop or do
okay,
you move so, forward?
So there are some of my clients that because they are undocumented, we refer them to some other agencies that could help them to help them they're becoming resident or documented in short. So now the process started, and then all of a sudden there is a change in government, and then those process will have to stop. So do they have to continue with that? And some of them are already actually paying. Some of them are paying because the referrals we gave them is not like totally free. So some of them are saying that, okay, do we have to continue this process, or do we have to wait for the new administration to come up with their plan?
Well, I would love to answer your question, but I don't have the answer to the question. But my advice is for you, who's doing the referral, to contact the organizations where you are actually sending those people and ask them the same question, and they will answer. But I can't give you a definite answer on that because I don't know the qualifications of the places where you are actually referring those people. But I'm sure that if they are able to assist people in getting a status in the U.S., they have qualified lawyers over there that can answer the question that you're asking me. Okay?
Okay. So, I know, but you see, from the standpoint of the client, if I contact some of those agencies, they will have an answer for me. But the client wants to know if they should continue with that or they should wait for, since that one is actually costing them some money no matter how small the money is, they're still spending money. So they're just asking, now we hear that government is trying to do something, so do we still have to continue with the process that we're already doing? Some of them are going through asylum and all that. Some of them are doing when they see somebody they want to get married to and all that.
But then what I'm saying, either you ask the client to ask the question to the people that are actually helping him, or you as a caseworker, you approach these attorneys or legal consultants that are helping those clients, and they will answer your question.
Oh.
I'm not privy to that relationship.
Okay.
What I'm trying to say here is that I'm not going to give you an answer on something that I don't know, because I don't know the specific of those cases. But in my situation as an immigration attorney, I have clients, and just because Biden has promised something that has not even passed the Senate yet or the Congress, I'm not going to stop helping people because I'm waiting on that. And even when Biden will be given these papers, when the bill actually passes, people are still going to need people like you and I to help them, and they're still going to spend money. So I guess it's a personal decision. Do I stop or do I move forward? Or to get the answer to your question, you should ask directly to the people that are on the field with your client.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
You
already answered my question.
Okay. Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let me move over. I have 9502 here. 9502 with 717 as the first three numbers. Ça va? Ça va? Hello? Okay. Yes.
Bonsoir,
Oui, bonsoir. Vous allez bien?
Ça va bien chez vous, ça va?
Oui, ça va très bien, merci.
Ah, bien, merci. Ok, pour moi, je vais demander seulement celui qui a déjà fait au moins 14 ans dans ce pays, Ekin a okri nan papye la. Koman la person pe fe? Pourrais me parler en français, s'il vous plaît?
Well, she's asking basically if you have been in this country for 14 years, what can you do?
Okay. I understand. Yeah. I don't you just want you to know that I understand.
Yeah, but the other people don't.
In those days, when French teacher comes in, we just talk to you.
I'm going to answer in French and then.
That's good.
Madame.
Oui, je vous écoute.
La question que vous me posez, je ne peux malheureusement pas vous répondre parce que je ne suis pas ici en train de faire des consultations spéciales spécifiques sur les gens. Si vous voulez être traité, quand vous voulez être traité, vous allez chez le médecin. Ce n'est pas à la radio que je vais vous dire. What I told her was that when she's asking me what can she do after 15 years in this country, this program was not meant for me to give specific advice on the case because I don't know her situation.
That's it.
There is no way I can help her. That I can, if I start asking her personal questions here, then her privacy is out.
Sure.
So this is not the perfect forum to be helping somebody in her case. So she should contact me later, make an appointment, and come to the office so that we can discuss.
Okay,
That's what I told her.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let me move again because I still have a lot of people who wants to ask one question or the other.
But look, Pastor, this is a conversation to learn. People should not come here with specific problems because this is an opportunity for them to ask, you know, if I'm legal in this status, in this country, do I get something under Biden? People have to ask smart questions, you know, not try to take a shortcut to get a consultation for their own issue. That way we don't learn.
Sure.
If you want to learn, we have to ask general questions.
General questions.
Tell me about this. Tell me about that. Not, for example, my sister, what if? That's not the way it works. Ask me smart questions. I'm going to give you answers, and then you will learn. I'm not here to solve somebody's problem. You know what I'm saying? The office is made for that. So if people don't have general questions, then I can start lecturing.
Okay.
Maybe from there.
Maybe
ask questions.
Okay. Let me just bring up one person. Then you can lecture.
Okay.
So maybe from that lecture we can draw some questions. 8483. You are here. 8483. Hello.
Hello, Bashiru. Yeah, good evening. This is Bashiru Adebayo from Chicago, Illinois.
Thank you.
Yeah. I thank you and the attorney that you brought to us today. Please, I did not get the one aspect very well, and that has to do with the Biden's new. The attorney to clarify that further because I did not get it clearly. I just want to know this.
Okay.
Without necessary ingredients. That is my question. Thank you.
Can you quickly answer that before you start the lecture?
I don't know what he's talking about because he was breaking out.
Phone was broken.
And I haven't yet spoken about the Biden's proposal. So I don't know exactly what thing. But let me just talk about the whole thing.
Okay.
It's very outline, and then I have some specific points that I want to talk about.
All right.
And maybe after that, people can ask questions. Now, it's a proposal, meaning that it's still in the works.
Mm.
It hasn't been decided yet. Hopefully, it's going to be decided upon soon.
Mm.
Now, the plan is to bring everybody to a pass for citizenship.
Mm.
Under the proposal, Biden is thinking that he's going to create what he calls a lawful prospective immigrant category.
Okay.
Lawful prospective immigrant. Let's call it LPI. Those are everybody that are undocumented in the U.S. Undocumented is a very important word.
Mm.
It means that you have no documents. So if you are here on a tourist, I mean, undocumented people that arrive here before January 2021, right?
Yes.
That's understood. Undocumented is very important. If you are a tourist, right, you are not undocumented. If your 6 months is still valid, you are not
undocumented,
right? If you're a student, an international student, F1, who's paying, who has an I-20, I don't think you're undocumented.
Mm.
So this pertains to only people that are out of status in the U.S.
Mm.
There are two ways you can be out of status, actually three ways.
Okay.
One way, you can be out of status because you just let everything run out, right? And you didn't do anything with immigration.
Mm.
You are out of status. You can be an out of status who is in process, meaning you have applied, let's say, for asylum or for whatever. You are in the process. You are still undocumented.
Mm.
You can also be out of status because you have applied for something in the past
mm.
and it didn't work.
Mm.
And you went through the channel of the Department of Justice
mm.
and it still didn't work.
Mm.
And you were deported. I mean, an order of deportation was entered against you. You didn't leave the country.
Hmm.
So those are undocumented people. So President Biden wants to create a category that we call lawful prospective immigrants.
Immigrants.
Meaning people that are here undocumented, but they are trying to get something.
Hmm.
In that ballpark, there will be dreamers, meaning children that were brought here illegally by their parents many, many years ago, that we call DACA, right?
Yes, yes.
They are in there. There are people, like I just said, who applied for something, it didn't work, who didn't apply for anything, and they're sitting at home, like the lady who called me a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are in the process, they are in that category. For the purpose of our discussion, the Biden plan is to provide to keep people in that category for 5 years while they are being vetted.
Okay.
Okay. Meaning that the government is going to go through police record, report, finger by fingerprints, FBI and everything to see if you haven't committed a crime.
Any crime.
If you haven't committed a crime before you were in that category and during the time that you are
in the process.
Mm-hmm. So at the end of the your LPI status, okay, you get to become a legal permanent resident.
Hmm.
So you are an LPI for 6 years, right? And then after 6 years, you can apply for permanent residency. And after 3 years, you can apply for citizenship. The good part about, the good thing about that is that people that have gone through the process or applied for something and it didn't work,
mm.
they will now get something.
Okay.
Because those people already have an order of deportation against them.
Okay.
But they just didn't leave. Mm. Those are the people that if they are arrested on the street, they get shipped immediately.
Mm.
They don't get to go before a judge like the people that were going to do the testimony.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. Yes.
So the good part is that these people that have already gone through everything, that have deportation orders against them, they get to build up with the lawful prospective immigrant status.
Okay.
And while they are in that category, I'm sure they will have some sort of legal right to work, perhaps even legal right to travel outside of the U.S.
Yes.
Perhaps. Okay. Now, it's also good for people like the lady who called earlier, who's been here for 14 years and hasn't done anything.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's her opportunity to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Then she will get the right to work and perhaps the right to travel.
Okay.
It's even better for people that are already in the process because they have applied for asylum or because whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get something. Maybe they will have the option to continue the asylum claim, or they will be put in that category.
In that category, okay.
But the best thing about this process is that it's going to enlighten the burden of the immigration court.
Mm.
Because then there won't be any more litigation in court.
Mm.
You are in court because you are in violation of immigration law, and you have to prove to the judge that you have a form of relief, like asylum or something else, that allows you to stay here, right?
Yeah.
So if you don't have to litigate anything, you just sit home and wait for 6 years and then 3 years to get the green card, then you don't have to go to court.
Okay.
People that are going to be going to court are those who have committed crimes.
Crimes.
And who are trying to persuade the government that they deserve the Biden law.
Oh, thank you.
Then we're going to be in court for those people.
Hmm.
Or people who have committed crimes while they were in this category, and immediately the government is like, okay, you've killed somebody because you were drunk. We're going to remove you from the LPI category. We're going to immigration court because you're going to hire an attorney to convince the immigration judge that you can stay in that category.
Mm.
The bad thing is that a lot of immigration attorneys are going to go bankrupt. There won't be any litigation.
No more litigation.
But in a good way. I mean, it's better to be bankrupt. Everybody gets papers, right?
Mm.
But still, we're going to have clients because at least people are going to come to us to process paperwork.
Sure.
It's going to be easier for us to help clients because then we don't have all the antagonistic movement against us. Because then if you are out of status, you just come to my office, I fill out some form, okay? If you don't have any clients here, it's a slam dunk.
That is it.
Then the only thing I have to explain to you is that you're going to be here like this for 6 years, and then after that, this is going to happen. So, in sum, that's what Biden is promising us.
Okay.
A path to citizenship. Speaking about asylum specifically, the one-year filing deadline, because in order to apply for asylum and be granted asylum, you have to be here, you have to apply within a year.
Within a year.
Within your first year, unless you can prove some exceptions.
Okay.
But under Biden's proposal, he's trying to get rid of that one-year filing deadline.
Okay.
Meaning that because you've been here for 15 years, your asylum claim does not die just because you passed the one-year filing deadline.
Mm.
That's specific to asylum. I mean, there are other provisions in that, you know, I can talk about. For example, let's talk about criminal convictions, right?
Okay.
Currently, right now, if you have a DUI, if you are charged with something,
okay,
and the case is dismissed in criminal court,
okay,
or you are convicted of something and then the conviction is vacated, if you go to immigration court, the immigration judge is still going to consider it.
Okay.
Just by virtue of you being charged of something. He's going to look at the facts, right?
Okay.
And even if you were not convicted, he can still use it against you for being a person of bad moral character.
Mm.
Biden is trying to get away
rid of that. Okay.
So whatever the immigration judge considers has to be a real conviction, not just allegation.
Mm.
Like he was drunk, he admitted he was drunk, but yet the judge dismissed the case.
Mm.
Why is the immigration judge trying to take his green card away because he had a glass, you know? So that's good for quote-unquote criminals.
Mm.
Now, another part of the proposal says that if you are a convicted felon, of course, you lose a lot of things.
Mm.
If you have three misdemeanors, you still lose a lot of things. That has been law, and it will keep the law.
Mm.
under the plan. So, well, that's, you know, in sum what we're looking at. And it's a very good package. And finally, when you are in the United States, you exceed your stay for 180 days, you are, and you leave the country, you cannot come back for 3 years.
It's called the three-year ban. Okay.
If you exceed your stay of a year, then you have a 10-year ban. You cannot come back to the country. Even if your son applies for you and gives you the green card, or your husband, you cannot come back for 10 years unless there is a waiver in place.
No.
Biden is trying to get rid of those bans as well.
Okay.
So I think it's a very good package, and I don't know how far it's going to pass.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah. With all the explanation, I think some people's agitation or what they wanted to ask for, you have answered it already. But I know some people will still have one thing or the other to ask you. Let me go to this person, 8331. You are here. 8331.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi, how are you? Hello?
Yes, good evening, sir.
How are you, mommy?
I'm fine, thank you.
First of all, you deserve a vote of thanks coming out and say loud and clear to a lot of people who are very adamant in asking questions from the immigration lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Some are ignorant. They don't want to pay. They don't want to pay for the consultation. Just look at you. You offered everybody a free of charge consultation. And I know for sure people of this caliber, right, if they are listening tonight, there will be a sign of joy in their faces. Because a lot of people in America, like Nigerians, they were the victim of circumstances and not even explain because of their ignorance. So you deserve that. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. You're welcome,
sir. You're welcome too. I have two substantial questions. One will look like an advice. And if it's beyond or within your capability in immigration services, I think I'm going to get a very good answer. The first one is I want you to clarify one thing, because in the month of February, I think I've been hearing a lot of information, even rampant. The information was very rampant about what President Biden is going to do. Like, before the end of the July or the 1st of the July, there will be an asylum to some certain categories of people. The information was very rampant. Do you know anything about it? That is my first question. If you know anything about it, can you please explain it?
I just spent the last 10 minutes talking about Biden's proposal. It's a proposal. It's in the works. Nothing has been done yet. I don't know what you mean by rampant information, but the best way to get information is not on the street. Is to go online and Google it. If you have questions, you can ask to, you can call Congress. You get the answer to those questions. But I just sort of summarize what the proposal is about. And it's not yet law. We don't know yet what's going to pass Congress. We are all waiting. Okay?
Okay, that one is cleared. My second question. The second question now is, I just need a piece of advice about a situation where one of my sisters in Chicago found herself. She doesn't have a paper. She came here legal, like having a visa. But she was wasting her time find one or two things to do to make herself be legalized in America. But you know, in Nigerian people, sometimes all what they wanted to do is to work and make money and send money back home. Some of them don't even ever think about how to make their life stable in the United States. So they don't want to suffer. They only want money. Probably maybe they were being sent away from Nigeria, from the debt, or maybe they just wanted to come here and make money and go back. People have different ideology, and people have different ways of living a standard life. To myself, I believe if you want to live a standard life, you have to have a paper. Okay. To my question now, this my sister was driving with somebody else's name. She went to work. She got pulled over. The license was produced with the registration, and the police officer was so smart to identify who is in the license that this is not her. From there, questioning started. From there, court. From court, immigration. From immigration, deportation. She's now in Nigeria. How long do you think she's going to stay in Nigeria before she could be able to come back here? She has 3 kids here. She has her husband here too. No papers. Mm. But the husband now is trying to mingle and navigate himself to a correct standard of her situation. How long do you think she can stay in Nigeria before she can come back here?
Well, there is a 10-year ban for people who have exceeded 1 year of illegal status in the U.S. She has to go through the 10 years, and even after the 10 years, if she wants to come here as a tourist, it's up to the embassy to get her the visa or not, because it's still discretionary whether you are under the 10-year ban or you are not, meaning the embassy decides under which criteria they will give somebody a visa to come here to visit, regardless of the ban, right? Now, if her husband becomes U.S. citizen, if her husband becomes a U.S. citizen, or one of her children reaches the age of 21, they can petition for her. At that point, she's going to need a waiver to be able to beat the 10-year ban. I mean, it's a process. This is about what I can say. Somebody has to petition for her, either her husband, if he's a citizen, or her child, when the child turns 21.
Okay? What about the family? What about the family?
Oh, the family, I don't think so.
Hmm. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The question has been answered. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, let me I still have some couple people who 3079, you are here. 3079.
How are you? Hello. Good evening. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Hello? Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the question that I want to ask that the brother just talked right down. He really elaborate what I really want to ask about Biden mission by July. That we heard the information that there's a lot of big opportunity that is coming on the immigration status that by July, but we don't really know deep about it. That's my question that I want to ask you, that can you just give us enlightenment about it?
I've already talked about it, sir, and
I know you already talked about it.
So we need to wait until Biden's proposal comes up. Okay, thank you very much, sir. So let me ask you this question. Somebody just typed this and sent it to me. It said, when you become citizen, your alien number, is it still very, very valid, or you don't have nothing to do with it?
Well, when you become a citizen, your alien number is on your citizen, your naturalization certificate. And
yeah.
sometimes when you petition for your children or relatives, on the form they ask you for your alien number. But if you don't remember it, it's on your naturalization certificate. Whether you remember it or not,
mm-hmm.
it's going to stick with you. It's like a social security number for immigration.
Okay.
That's your tag.
Mm-hmm.
So it sticks with you forever, even if you forget it. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I think, the person who asked that question, your alien number is like your social. So it sticks with you until you go to go and meet your father. Thank you for asking that question. Let me go to 5484. Hello, Professor. Hello? 9484.
Hello.
Hello, sir.
Hello, I am with you. Are you hearing me?
Yes, people can hear you.
Hello.
All over.
Thank you. I want to thank our immigration lawyer. And I want to thank him not for his expertise, because I know you cannot be a lawyer in America without being an expert. I want to thank her for her generosity.
There's no question
that should be free if not that you are very generous.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for an immigration lawyer for a friend. This lady is a blind person. She came to America as a blind person. She got a job. But if you know blind people, they can be touchy. They can be over frank, over things. So where she worked, they know her as Mrs. No Nonsense. And because of that, they didn't fire for her until her contract ended. I was to get her an immigration lawyer. Despite the fact that I explained her condition to that immigration lawyer, that she was jobless and she wanted to return to Britain where she came from. She is a citizen of Britain. But her two sons insisted they wanted to wait behind and she couldn't leave them. But she didn't have money. The lawyer said, before I can even listen to her at all, she has to pay $150. The lady had to call me with the work she explained and said, before I could answer your question, you have to pay $150. I am blind. I am jobless. No, she didn't want to hear. I had to pay that $150 before she listened to her at all. A mother like her. And when they discussed, the lady discovered the lawyer cannot help her because they live far away apart. The lady is in another state like Florida, so I don't want to mention the state. And the lawyer is in New York. So what I'm buttressing is that I appreciate your generosity. But the Yoruba proverb says that when you pour your small water into a mighty ocean, one day that ocean will overflow and flow to your door to wet your compound. That is the law of nature. So you are not doing anything for free. God will reward you for it. Thank you. My name is Moses.
I appreciate it, Moses. Thank you.
This Baba who just spoke now.
You know him?
Yeah, he's a professor.
Okay. Oh, okay.
He's a lecturer here in America in one of the universities.
Oh.
He's the one who used to take the Oyibos, the white people, to University of Ibadan, to teach them Yoruba. And by the time they come back, they'll be speaking Yoruba like at least they were born in Lagos.
Wow.
So that is what he does.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Professor. God bless you, sir. So,
now,
hello. So right now, if I should continue to allow questions since our solicitor has lectured us and he said we should still put our everything on hold until when the laggards of immigration by Biden's immigration comes up, everybody is expecting. We are on the lookout. Even those of us who are citizens, we are on the lookout because when it is better for your neighbor, it is good for you too. So we are on the lookout, and we are hopeful, very, very hopeful and praying that everything will stay true. So that is about that. So if you want to consult her, this is the second time we'll bring her on board. The first time she was not here, we just connected her from Maryland. But today she offered to come and appear physically. So those of you that are watching on Facebook, you can see her physically. And those of you that are on YouTube too. So I really appreciate your coming.
Thank you.
God bless you. And many people might want to contact you. Those of you who want to contact her, you can contact this radio station. Contact me. Contact Oyekole, contact Professor Mabaye, you can contact Yemi Ogeni, you can contact Akim Afinola, you can contact Omotosho, anybody you can contact, you contact me. And but I want to give her the opportunity to talk to you, tell you and contact phone number. Over to you.
Thank you, Pastor. My name is Cécile Lantoin. Like I said, my office is in Silver Spring, Maryland. It's about an hour and a half away from here. My phone number is 240-705-1727. 240-705-1727. I prefer that people send me text.
Right.
I prefer that people send me text messages on WhatsApp. And then I can call them because I'm often in court and sometimes with clients. And to avoid any interruptions or disruptions, leave messages, either voice messages or text messages. I will get back to you within 24 hours, unless I'm away. But I do still call people back. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Like she said, you can contact her anytime about through text messages, so because she's always busy being in court with anybody. And another question, another thing I want to enlighten people, if you are listening to this program in California, Texas, or anywhere in of America, this solicitor can go anywhere. Sometimes she goes to California, goes to Florida. Am I?
Yes, yes,
how,
yes.
So
right.
It goes
immigration attorneys have no limit.
They have no
limit.
They
can defend in the country.
So they can go to anywhere and do their job. So if you are anywhere listening to this, you can contact her. She will be there in that court. Don't say, oh, it is far. No, nowhere is far in America. She can be there and solicit for you. And like I said, I've never known her or heard that she lost any case. No, she's always a winner.
Thank you, Pastor.
She's always a winner. And in your own case, she will be a winner too. So when you hand over your case to her, with God, all things are possible. And I believe you shall have testimony like others have gotten their own testimony. You have your testimony too. So that is all about that. Thank you for coming, for driving all these long routes to come over here to come and appear physically in the studio. Thank you. And I appreciate all of you that asked questions over there. So if you still have other questions, you can still communicate through the telephone number 240-705-1727. Once again, 240-705-1727. So my name is Fafi. As you all know, I have my granddaughter in the house who is connecting everything together, Nene Fafi. And those of you out there, I say kudos and God bless you. Next time, we want to have you again.
Because.
Most especially when Biden comes up with the goodies.
Exactly.
So
yes.
I would just say, okay, people want you, and I believe
Fine.
You will be here.
Thank you.
Thank you
always for having me. I'm grateful.
Hey! Ça, c'est le tube à Sidonio Papillon!
Maladie, Bibi Daouda, Flavien Johnson.